So for this evening's Dhamma talk, somebody was asking me to talk about a subject which I don't think I've talked about for a long time, about acceptance and rejection, and just how does that can be dealt with in our life and in our spiritual journeys. And for obviously the first thing about acceptance and rejection is that when somebody just cuts you off and exiles you, puts barriers between them and you, and barriers, walls which are just so difficult to penetrate, we've been rejected, cast out, and the image which comes to my mind was of, this was a Zen nun who wrote this letter containing this poem just after the bhikkhuni ordination many years ago. And it went something like, heretic rebel, they drew a circle which shut me out. Rebel, heretic, someone to flout. But love and wisdom had the wit to win. We drew a bigger circle, which included them in. And I thought that was a very beautiful little analogy, a visual, that sometimes people will draw a circle and which will enclose you and just shut you out from other things. But you can always build a bigger circle, a bigger circle, a bigger circle, which can include so many other people and animals and other beings inside your realm of people, things, animals, which you can accept into your life. And it was one of the meditation exercises which I basically developed many years ago on loving kindness. You know that sometimes you can imagine a circle, and inside that circle is all the people, animals, beings, behaviors, which you can tolerate, the things which you like and can accept, the views, conduct. And inside that circle is the people, not just people, views, events, which you know you're comfortable with. And just outside are people, situations, events, your past, your future, which is okay if that happens, but you'd rather it didn't. And as you extend the circle, go further from the center of the circle, is things which you find very difficult to accept. And as you go further, things which are even repugnant to you. And people who are repugnant to you. And situations and actions which you find it so difficult to accept. And this meditation is learning to expand that circle. To expand that circle as far as you can, which is very difficult. Bigger and bigger and bigger. Because when there are things outside which you have rejected, that's the cause of a huge amount of problems for you. This is not accepting in the sense of allowing repugnant actions and behavior to continue, but it's actually the solution so that repugnant actions and behavior and people don't continue. It's a solution which at first is counterintuitive, but of course you find it does work. The story which comes to mind, the real story, is of that anecdote of opening the door of your heart, no matter what a person has done, and how that went on to places which I never imagined when I started teaching that story. And this is, I don't know, the last time I said this story, about 6 months ago, I think, there was a story of the organization, I think it's in Stirling Street, if it's still there, Assets, the Australian Society of Survivors of Torture and Trauma. And people who've really been sort of through experiences, painful, degrading experiences, which, you know, make your skin creep. But I was surprised when they were telling me just one of the stories they were using was this opening the door of your heart. And it was an example of accepting what sometimes people thought was intolerable. Because what they did, they told me how they'd adapted this. I was so happy and pleased. You don't take a story and make a dogma out of it and have to do it this particular way, but use it and just expand it and use it places where, you know, I would never think of using it. And this was where people who had been traumatized deeply, especially those who were refugees, gone through terrible times, come to a place of a country of safety, Northern Australia, but only their body was free and their emotions were still traumatized by those torture chambers and dungeons, are real. And how they managed to find freedom emotionally was with the opening the door of your heart story. They imagined in the middle of their heart, first of all, when they felt safe. It's important to have that feeling of safety, not being forced, not being having to do this, but when you feel that you're ready and you want to give this a try, always knowing you can just come out at any moment, any time. You're not trapped in this process of, you know, trying to heal things. But then when they imagine this, just in the middle of their heart, two doors in the chest, two doors. Let's go back a bit. The heart, the Valentine's Day heart, not a real heart. I, you know, have seen many pictures of real hearts, you know, with tubes all over the place. But, you know, that's hard to imagine. But the Valentine's Day heart, or the heart on a pack of playing cards, nice, easy to imagine. You imagine that in the center of your chest, and two doors, double doors, opening out. This is just a metaphor, a visualization of your own heart inside. And you imagine that yourself standing there, but not your whole being, just that part of you which you feel comfortable with, the part which you can even feel proud of, the part which, you know, you can live with very easily. But you do realize there's much of you which is missing. And that's the part of you which has failed, the part of you which was punished, the part of you which was in deep pain, even tortured, abused. And there's that part in each one of us which we try to hide from, to deny, to pretend did not exist. That is the core problem. And then we imagine those beings, those little boys, girls, young women, who are terribly, terribly treated, raped and beaten, tortured, whatever, or even just abuse, verbal abuse, all that's experiences which is so hard to bear and which we don't like to face. But that's you. We imagine those beings outside of us, in the cold, on the concrete, or the... they're outside in the cold. We imagine a staircase coming down from our heart, going down to the ground. On the top of that staircase, inside your heart already, is that part of you which you can live with, the kind part, the good part. And you ask, you see all those other parts of you outside. And you invite a little boy who was savagely beaten, that girl who was abused, that young woman who was badly treated, rejected, misunderstood. Invite all of those to come up, one by one, climbing those stairs with great fear, needing lots of encouragement to come into your heart, to find a home, not to be rejected anymore. It's where we learn to accept our past instead of being terrified of it. All of that to come in. That's who you are. You cannot deny. We allow it to come in. And when it does come in, when there is that acceptance, there is a huge change. We just notice how even some of the most difficult of experiences we can let in. It's an acceptance. It's a kindness, it's a care. And when we do make that caring connection, bringing things in rather than rejecting them, it does mean that we feel closer to being whole, to being at one with our past, and to accepting, digging it in, just like the old similes of the truckload of dung. When it comes to your house, you didn't order it, you can't blame anybody. And that simile, the truckload of dung, which was adopted as the title for the first book, Open the Door of Your Heart, the truckload of dung, it comes to your house while you're away. So you cannot call somebody to take it away. And you didn't order it. You can't blame yourself, you can't blame others. It's so easy to blame, but that doesn't get rid of the truckload of dung. The only way to get rid of it is actually to take it round the back and dig it in the garden. Other people, they carry that dung around with them, in their pockets, in their bags, in their shirts. And it's no wonder they lose a lot of friends. They're negative. Instead, we bring it into our hearts, bring it into our garden, and we grow. We grow the beautiful flowers and fruits. So many, we can give them to our friends and loved ones, and our monks and nuns, hopefully, so that they too can enjoy just what you can do with the difficulties of your life. Instead of rejecting, we recycle, dig in, embrace, bring inside. And it's not as if that by so doing we're just saying that these things are okay to dump truckloads of dung, you know, on top of you or inside of your sort of heart. But there is a way of making use of it. So instead of thinking, oh, why am I been rejected? Why have I been treated so badly? What have I done to have to experience this? Why did this happen to me? Instead of asking those sorts of questions, the answer should be, or the question should be, what am I doing with this? How can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? How can I make use of it? Because you can't get rid of the pain of the past in the sense of pretending it doesn't exist. Or what one can do is to accept, acknowledge, be, and transform. And it's amazing just how many of the very difficult, painful experiences of life can be transformative. And these are similes which, you know, from my own experience, the time when I confronted my father, because he would never ever talk about his father, my paternal grandfather. So why don't you talk about him? And my paternal grandfather had died in Liverpool in the Second World War. Always thought it must have been some bomb during that war, but it was actually TB killed him. My brother found that out not so long ago. But why didn't you talk about your father? And that was because my grandfather, paternal grandfather, was an abuser. He would come home from work, he was a plumber. In the Depression years, where there was huge poverty, and he would, whatever money he earned, he would spend in the pub, and just come home, take off his belt, and he would beat any kid, including my father, for no reason whatsoever. And I remember my father just telling this with a lot of pain in his eyes, but also telling me that that wasn't the difficult part. The difficult part was when he saw his mother, my paternal grandfather, my paternal grandmother, being set upon by his father, my paternal grandfather. He would beat her. And there was nothing my father could do to protect his mum. And you'd think that would just create so much anger in a person, not only to feel the pain himself, but to see the only person he really loved, his mother, being treated just with such great abuse. But he told me, that's why he didn't want to talk about his father, but he also told me that whenever he was on the end of one of those beatings, or saw his mother being abused, he made a resolution. He decided that if ever he survived his childhood, that and if ever he had kids, he would never hit them at all. He couldn't. He tried several times, but he just could not do it. My brother and I would not ever be spanked by him. Couldn't. Because every time he tried, he realized that what it was like with that sort of violence and punishment and hurt. And I remember, I didn't understand at the time when I was a kid, but I understood afterwards that that was a case where someone had been through a very difficult time and had actually dug it into their garden. They'd not rejected it, but brought it inside and would not react and redo those experiences on other people. He learned, he grew, he broke the cycle by accepting what had happened, learning it and what it feels like, and then making sure he became a much better person as a result. For me, that's always the idea of the law of karma. Karma is not fate. Karma is the past karma, is all the stuff which has happened to you and in Buddhism, previous lives and this life, everything which has happened to you, creating the ingredients of this moment, of your life, right now, right here. This is your past, this is the ingredients. And you can't deny what had happened. But what you can do is learn to make something out of your past, of your experience, of who you are. Learn to make something out of it. And the wonderful thing is, the positive part is, doesn't matter what you've experienced in your life, whether you've been rejected, run away from home, whether your parents, you know, have rejected you, whether your wife, your children, your friends have shut you out, what are you going to do about that? So it's not living in the past and saying, why did this happen to me? Why? Who knows why? But what are you doing about it now? And the great thing is, there's always something you can do with what happened to you. And you see these great examples, the ones which are inspirations, the people who have been rejected, but who somehow or other make something of what they've had. One of those stories just comes to mind as my memory associates, was of this young boy in, I think it was California, Los Angeles, who ran away from home when he was only 4 years of age. But he survived. How he did that is just mind-boggling. Family, drugs, abuse, lived on the streets, put in homes, offended, put in children's institutions, and eventually into a lifetime of petty crime. And apparently he was about 45 or around that age, just coming to the end of another sentence, when his case officer just talked to him and said, you're going to be put on release soon, put on parole. It's very hard for a person like you to get a job, but I have a friend. And the friend is a director, a wannabe director, who is looking for people to help in a movie which he wants to be authentic. You know, how real hoodlums in Los Angeles speak and walk and act. You know, not like in some sort of Hollywood idea of what a gangster is, but what a real one is. And you know, you've got experience. So would you like a job as a consultant in a movie about how real gangsters speak and act? He said, well, why not? Can't get many jobs. And that was his very unique skill set. And so he got the job. And the director was so impressed with him, actually gave him a part in the movie. And the director was called Quentin Tarantino, Reservoir Dogs. He was apparently Mr. Pinky, and he was one of the stars of the movie. And then he said, 1 year later, when I read this little story, he was living in a mansion with a beautiful wife, with more money than he knew what to do with, because it was a very good movie, apparently. And no, I've never watched that. The reason it's Mr. Pinky, because I asked all my young monks who actually, you know, did you watch? Oh, yeah, yeah. And which was the guy? And said, oh, yeah, that Mr. Pinky really stood out. Was it Mr. Pinky or Mr. White? I don't know. But anyway, they gave them names. But anyway, he was a star. And it was a case that his karma from the past was terrible. But somehow or other, he made use of it in most weird ways, and became sort of really comfortable. And it just showed that just no matter what sort of calm you have from the past, you can actually make use of it in whichever way. It's one of the reasons why when people become monks, don't really care so much where they came from, but are they really willing to make use of their abilities, and some very unique abilities? Nuns, where you come from, I'm not sure, but You've been through your history. Let's make use of that to make some wonderful, wonderful contributions to our world. It's all about like accepting the past instead of rejecting it. It's like when you're rejected, how does that feel? People don't understand you. Why? Why are you being rejected? Give me a chance. And sometimes if you make use of that chance, it's amazing just to see these transformations in human beings and how their skill sets, give them half a chance, how they can become beautiful people. They have the old saying in, this is in Mahayana Buddhism, everyone's got Buddha nature, because it's a beautiful thing inside of you. And by accepting a person, respecting them, you actually bring that out in a being. By accepting and realizing that where there's a person, there's no such thing as a criminal. It's just a person who's done a crime. There's no such thing as a terrorist. It's a person who's done a terrorist act. If any of you ever visited prisons, sometimes you haven't got a clue, you know, who's done what. But what you do know is that inside each, sometimes, the first time I went inside a prison, many other times when people visit prisons, they come out with this stupid statement, they say, you know, they're just like us. Of course they are. But somehow or other you see that sometimes people feel there's something wrong with them. They've been rejected. And sometimes all one really needs is actually to go inside and see there's something beautiful. Already mentioned two of the titles of the same book, Open the Door of Your Heart, and also Who Ordered This Truckload of Dung. The German edition is called the Coup de Vinti, and that came from a prisoner who I saw at Cardinal Prison Farm. And when this prisoner first came up to me, he was huge, scarred all over, and he spoke with a very thick Belfast accent. By the way, the Coup de Vinti is a German translation of the cow that cried. And this person, big prisoner, he came up and said, look, I've got to really talk to you. I said, yeah, please, no, I've got time. And he said, he told me his background. And from Belfast, in the Troubles, he didn't say which side he was on, but he said that to give me an idea of his background, he said, I was first stabbed when I was about 6 years of age. I said, well, what happened? He said, just in the primary school, that the bully demanded the money he had for his lunch. And this six-year-old said, no. And the bully never asked again, just took out a knife and stabbed him in the arm. And, you know, he was more shocked than in pain. And as he ran out of the schoolyard to his house, not house, a little sort of terraced place where his family lived, his father, out of work, was there. Dad, I've been stabbed. And blood was running down the kid's arm, 6 or 7 years of age. And he said to me, he said, what my dad did, he never called the police. He never even bandaged or dressed the wound. He just opened a drawer in the kitchen, took out the sharpest knife which was there, gave it to his son and said, go stab that boy back. And he said, that was his upbringing. And, you know, he kept on swearing. He said, that's God's own something truth. I won't say the word in between, but it begins with F. you know, he just wanted to say he wasn't making this up, and you could see the scars on him. And he said, you know, I've been in and out of prison, and he confessed to me he'd murdered human beings, people. He was a murderer. I don't think he was in there for that crime. But no, he said he had such a really tough life. And he said the thing which changed him was in the prison farm just down the road. They have cows, sheep, I think pigs, and that's where they slaughter them for the prison system. And he said to get the job as a slaughterer, that was one of the most sought after jobs in the prison farm. He had to fight other prisoners for that. Only the toughest of the tough could get that job. And this big guy just standing over me, telling me this, interjecting with God's own something truth, just to make sure that I understood what he was saying was true. He said he was the chief slaughterer. And sometimes, what a stupid thing to do, that, you know, that people who are violent, they get more violent. But anyway, he said this particular day they were needing cows, beef, and so he was there with the gun, the electric gun. One shot to stun, two to kill. And he described, I've never seen it, I don't think I'm allowed to go to those places, that when as a monk you just go to the little chapel, or when I was there they had a little education room, and one to stun, two to kill. And today they were slaughtering cows. And he said as they came in, they knew what was going to happen to them, and they were all, there was like big stainless steel rails funneling in, and he was on a platform above so he could aim at the head. But he said the first shot would never, they always have to stun first because they could never actually aim properly because the cow was being executed, knew what was going to happen to them, were trying to escape. One to stun to keep them steady enough, second to kill. He said cow after cow, he'd done this for days, weeks, but then something happened which changed his life. He said a cow came in without making any sound, unlike any other cow he'd ever seen. And it had its head down, like, please excuse the metaphor, like someone doing walking meditation, mindfully positioning herself between the railings. And then when it was positioned, it looked up, turned around, and looked this Irish prisoner in the eyes. And he said, it was so uncommon, so weird, never seen the like of it before. He said, he froze. He couldn't aim the gun, let alone pull the trigger. Just staring. And he said he didn't know how many seconds or minutes passed by, but the longer he looked into the eyes of this cow, cow's got huge eyes, noticed that above the lower lid, water started to well up. More and more water, until there was too much water in the top of the eye, the bottom eyelid, that it started dribbling down his cheek, her cheek, sorry. And that just totally confused him. You go into one of those states where, is this really happening? What's going on? What? Until he noticed the same was happening in the other eye. Water was coming down that eye as well, until it dribbled over the cheek. The cow was crying. At that point, he threw down his gun. And he told the prisoner officer, you can do whatever you like to me, but that's it. And he said, that changed his life. A murderer who sought to kill as much as possible and didn't mind at all. He told me, said, I'm a vegetarian now, Chambaram, I'm a vegetarian. He wouldn't even sort of kill a cow, let alone sort of human beings anymore. I don't know ever what happened to him, but I'm sure he's gone out somewhere in this world and changed his life. But he was a huge fellow, the cow that cried. So sometimes his experience of life, you know, being a murderer, of being on the receiving end of a stabbing when he was only young, of being born in violence, is there a way out of that? Sometimes there is. You accept, understand, and are free. Instead of like rejecting. It's rejecting which hides it and doesn't allow any growth at all, any healing, any way forward. So that's also going to the spiritual life about your partners in life, your friends in life. Are they perfect? Sometimes we reject other people because they don't live up to our standards or whatever. We just, even metaphorically, kill them. Put them out of our life. Put them out of our misery, not out of their misery. We don't have to, anything to do with them anymore. You can never live like that for too long. After a while, it's some sort of unfinished business, something we have to sort of bring into our lives to actually to reconcile. Reconcile means not agreeing with everybody, not agreeing with what they've done, not agreeing with what you've done. But it's just learning it has been done. And there's only one way forward, is to make peace with people who are different than us. Different views, different lifestyles, different religions, different whatever. So actually to acknowledge those differences rather than rejecting them. To open our doors rather than build walls. To listen to one another without judging one another. To be able to hear rather than close our ears to the suffering of others and to our suffering. Not be afraid of it. Not being afraid of being confronted with sometimes things which one finds very difficult. But when we do that, there's a huge growth happens. And that growth is what I mean. From another example, what I mean by we don't try and cure other people. We care for other people. Don't try and cure yourself. Care for yourself. Care for the world. Don't try and cure it. And then the cure happens. All the time we're trying to fix things up, and then sometimes something happens in our life. We realize all that fixing things up, trying to sort of create some utopia in the future. All utopias, as you all know, just remembering from the wonderful little book, The Animal Farm. You know, sometimes in The Animal Farm, where the animals take over a human farm led by the pigs, and putting all animals are equal, they started off with saying. And they had the horse. The horse really worked hard, really worked so much to make the farm a viable option. But as soon as the horse, you know, became worn out, the pigs sent the horse to the glue factory. And sometimes I think of myself as the horse, working so hard for the Buddhist Society of West Australia, sacrificing all sorts of stuff until, you know, but you know, sometimes I haven't got to that stage yet. You sent me to the to the knacker's yard, I think it's called. But I also remember that where eventually they had all animals are equal, and that wonderful phrase from George Orwell, but some animals are more equal than others. It's amazing just how that human beings, sometimes we don't learn, we have to keep on learning, keep on growing. But sometimes that when we accept our stupidities, our weaknesses, our failings. We accept them instead of rejecting them, pretending they don't exist. And then we can accept other people's failings and other people's insecurities. And we do actually find that all humans, animals, beings are equal in that sense. What's the difference between you and others? Sometimes we feel, oh, no, we're worse and they're better. Is that true? Sometimes, oh, Ajahn Brahm, he's wise. Sometimes you see me acting in monastery. Sometimes I make big mistakes. Sometimes I gave a talk on Wednesday about solitude. And I said, no, it shouldn't really be about solitude, because, you know, because sometimes I still have a lot of English in me. And in English, sometimes, you know, somebody bumps into you and you say sorry. And whatever you do, you keep on saying sorry. So it's not solitude, it's the English sorry-tude. Always want to be sorry about what you did wrong. That's called sorry-tude. So come out of that sorry-tude. Or even better, that sometimes, because I tell many, many bad jokes, sometimes it's, you know, not solitude, but silly-tude. So I spend a lot of time in monastery, not in solitude, but in silly-tude. A little joke. But anyway, that's who I am. And I'm sorry, but I just can't get out of that. I tell bad jokes, and just, you should know that before you come in here. So that's why I encouraged Dennis to. Okay, he told my joke. I'm going to now tell your joke, which you told me. About, this is more like a Buddhist joke, the past and future walked into a bar. But it couldn't stay very long because it was too tense. Past and future, too tense. That was Dennis's joke. So you hang around too long together and you tend to sort of be almost the same. But anyhow, so where we're going with this is learn to accept yourself as you are. Sometimes they call this like being authentic. Because sometimes that we sometimes, because we try and be something we're not, we get tense, we fail, we do terrible things. It's important to be honest, authentic, be at peace with who you are. You don't always have to be the best. Accept yourself and don't reject the part of you which you feel needs to be improved. What is our life anyway? Sometimes you're trying to find a perfect partner, a perfect person, a perfect government, perfect economy, perfect. And sometimes that you've been around long enough, there's no such thing. And when's the last time I told the story of the donkey down the pit? Okay, here we go. There was a donkey down a pit. Fed down the pit. I told this story because the first one I told this story to was the president of Sri Lanka, Rajapaksa, because he was going through a hard time. And just, you know, sometimes, you know, politicians in, I don't, well, actually I should be quiet because he's still a politician, but I told him once, and he said it's so tough sometimes that he gets criticized, sometimes too harsh. Do you agree with that? Our politicians? Do you know any? Could you do better? Sometimes it seems so easy to do better, you know, when, you know, you're watching from the sidelines. But actually, to be there and do it, it's tough. We've got pressures all over you from each side. But one of the things which I thought would be great if politicians could do would be honest. To confess they made mistakes. But unfortunately, that if they confess they made mistakes, that they're human beings and they sometimes get it wrong. You know what happens? They get sacked by the press. The media says they're awful. They made too many mistakes. That's one of the problems with our governments, that you're not allowed to admit to mistakes when you're in government. We learn from mistakes, if we could only admit them. But anyway, old Rajapaksa, who actually was young at the time, president of Sri Lanka, I told him, it's just once upon a time a donkey was walking unmindfully and fell down a well. And the well was dry. So at the bottom of the well, it didn't drown, it didn't even break its legs, but it was stuck down the bottom of the well. And how can a donkey climb out of a well? Can't! So the donkey thought, what am I going to do? So it started crying out for help. Eeyaw! 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 Which is donkey language for help me. He didn't know that. That's cat, I think. So anyway, it was going eeyaw, eeyaw, eeyaw for such a long time that his throat was always getting a bit hoarse. Okay, that was a bad joke. Anyway, eventually a farmer heard it and looked down the well and says, oh, that stupid donkey down there, good riddance, you know, should be more careful. I mean, that's a dangerous well, maybe I might fall down, or one of my friends might fall down there, so I've got to do something about this. And that farmer, you know what he did? He decided to fill up the well with the donkey in the bottom. That would serve that stupid animal. Right, stupid animals, donkeys, don't need them around. So I decided to get out a spade and throw all this soil into the well to bury the donkey alive and also to fill up the well so it was not a danger to anybody anymore. So this donkey thought it was being helped. But this man threw another shovel full of soil, another shovel full of soil, another shovel full of soil over the donkey. And the donkey realized this man was not being kind, was not trying to help the donkey, was trying to kill the donkey. So the donkey started going, eeyaw, eeyaw, eeyaw. Which in donkey language is, please call the RSPCA. Or something like that. And so, another shovel full of dirt, another shovel full of dirt, another shovel full of dirt. And soon the donkey went quiet. And the farmer thought, ha ha, I've killed and buried that stupid donkey. But he still had to fill up the well, so he kept on shoveling. But of course, he hadn't killed the donkey. The donkey was smart, much smarter than the bad farmer. So what the donkey did was every time another shovel full of dirt was thrown over the donkey shook it off, stamped it under its feet, and the donkey was another centimeter higher. Another shovel full of dirt, shake it off, stamp it in, another centimeter higher. And the farmer was so busy shoveling, never bothered to see a pair of donkey ears appear at the top of the well. Another few shovels, and then a donkey head appear. Another few shovels, and the donkey shook it off, stamped it in, and the donkey was even higher. So high that he managed to jump out of the well and to escape. So when people abuse you and throw all sorts of stuff at you and tell you you're a bad president, a bad monk, a bad daughter, a bad whatever it is, what should you do? Shake it off, stamp it in, and you're on higher ground. So I remember telling, I don't know if that was a good story to tell a president, but anyway, I can understand that. But anyway, sometimes that people do criticize you, and just, is it right, is it wrong, I don't know. I don't know the background, I don't know what goes on, and one person's story, another person's story, but that is our life. And one of the nicest things is let people just understand these wisdom stories, so they can respect and find a way through. Because sometimes when a person gets rejected, especially a person in power, what do? They overreact, and sometimes those overreactions, because they've been rejected, because they feel that people have got enemies, sometimes it causes a huge amount of problems for our world. So instead of rejection, it doesn't matter who that person is, befriend them. What that animal is, befriend. What that situation is, befriend it. Learn from it. That's probably one of the most wonderful ways forward. We have our circle. We expand and expand and expand. Even if it's a tumor in your own body, make peace with it. Don't fight it. The stress which caused that disease in the first place, you're only adding to. Embrace. Allow it in to your circle. Sickness, death, allow it in to your circle. Make peace, not just with people and beings, with all parts of life. That's the only way you can be true and honest to the facts of life. Thank you for listening. Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, any complaints? They will all be accepted. As best I can. Okay. We got some from overseas. Okay, we have from Air Force One. One of these days. From the UK. If you accept violence from someone like terrorists, isn't that sending the wrong message? If you accept everything, how would laws work? Shouldn't there be consequences to people's actions? Those consequences will come by themselves. One of my favourite sayings, and I was responsible for this, please don't get offended, but you can remember it very easily. No need to seek revenge, because karma will get the bastards anyway. Please excuse that word, but that's when people remember it. Because don't you believe in the law of karma? So, a terrorist? No. If you put a person, give them a name, they're a terrorist. They become a terrorist. Putting them in jail forever? It must make some martyrs. So, there isn't sending the wrong message. You don't accept violence. You just accept the person. In other words, you understand a person, why a person did that. You know, one of the terrorists who blew up power stations and apparently even killed a person, Nelson Mandela? Was he a terrorist? He was put in jail for terrorism offences. So what is the difference? But sometimes you accept the person, not the deed. What do you do when everything in life falls apart? I have no friends, no job, my parents are narcissists, and I'm in a huge depression. What can I do? It's, first of all, life falls apart. Not all of life falls apart. I don't know where you are in India. But no friends, no job. You do have a friend. Yourself. This is not a joke. To make peace with yourself. You are your best friend. As I said, was it last week or the week before? Learning how to love oneself. Accept oneself. Be a friend to oneself. And once you know how to love yourself, I don't mean a narcissist way, but accept yourself. Maybe you can learn how to love your life. And no job? If you feel that life has fallen apart and there's nothing you can do, look at that person who was in jail for so many years in LA. You know, and when he was a bit positive, life turned around just like that. In a huge depression, that's when, please excuse me in India, but that you've had truckloads of dung and you've been carrying around with you. That's why you don't have friends. So who wants to go out with somebody who's got a huge amount of shit in their bag? So, you know, people like that, oh, poor me, what happened to me? Of course it's difficult. So learn from it, grow from it. Okay. It's easier to accept your past from USA when you understand the no-self philosophy, or let go of your ego by remembering you don't own your past. Oh, is it easier to accept your past when you understand the no-self philosophy, or let go of your ego by remembering you don't own your past? Yeah, it's much easier that way. Because that's, you know, who are you? And sometimes we're the abused child. We're the person who wasn't really loved by our father. I am the person who was beaten by my father and I couldn't protect my mother. I'm talking my father's voice. You can let that go and learn from it. But he wasn't a Buddhist, he didn't understand non-self. But still, he had the wisdom to know that that is not a way forward. It's not a viable way forward in our life. We can't just keep visiting the sins of our fathers in our own children. So there is a way we can end that stuff. And that's one of the reasons I gave this talk. There is a way that we can expand our circles instead of narrowing them and hating the whole world. Including ourselves. We want to just be nihilists and blow up the world, destroy everything. Expand. Don't contract. This world is already just too much rejection, too much contraction, too many sort of enclaves of the elite. Open our doors, throw our doors wide open. See what happens. Anyway. There we go. Any other questions from here? You don't have to agree with everything I say, but please don't reject it. There's a middle way. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha and then see what happens next.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namami.
How'd you go?
Okay. How you felt? Yeah? 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 Yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah.